section, National Council of Jewish Women Oral History. And I'm here with my partner, Deborah Gordon. It is October the 19th, 1989. And we're here to interview Dr. Herman Gordon. Would you give us your complete name, address, and...
I am Herman Gordon of 128 North Craig Street, Pittsburgh, PA. Born March 26, 1912.
Dr. Gordon, I understand you had an interesting career in the Navy. Would you like to tell us about that, starting with when you went into the Navy or how you happened to go into the Navy and go from there?
The years of Hitler prior to the United States' entry into the war was very disturbing to me as a Jew. And I felt it was my role to participate in the war, and I enlisted in the Navy. I had been in practice for 6 years prior to that. I entered as a junior lieutenant. And great party was held for me, which we all got good and tight. And then they escorted me down to the train station. And I was off to the war with all sorts of thoughts fleeting through my mind of the hazards that I would encounter, the possible death that might result. It was just a big unknown question what lay ahead.
Where were you?
Then I was stationed at Bainbridge, Maryland, which was a boot training camp. I spent 2 years there and was far removed from the war itself, as was most Americans. At Bainbridge, it was the Tome Prep School, which was converted into a base. At that time, the roads were all dirt and mud and clay after the rains. We lived in barracks that were hastily erected, and the base very soon expanded to hold thousands and thousands of men. When I went down to the railroad station to get tickets, they didn't even know where the base was, but then it expanded into a very important one. My role there was primarily a dental officer. And we worked and played ball and partied and took weekends to Washington or New York or Philadelphia. And it was a lazy life. Then I got sea duty, and I moved down to Baltimore, spent a month or two while my ship was being outfitted. It was it was one of the Kaiser ships, that were hastily built and played a great role in our winning the war. We sailed out of, I had to change the specifications to ensure that we had proper lighting because it was so inadequate. Preparation was so hasty, and they didn't have time to think out the great details. Then we sailed off to the Pacific.
What year was this, do you remember?
I entered in 1942, and I sailed off to the Pacific in 44. Our reefers were filled with frozen foods to last for at least 2 years. At that time, we were busy trying to take back the islands in the Pacific from Japan. We sailed down through the Panama Canal, off to Pearl Harbor, and everything was a blackout. We were escorted by destroyers. They were constantly zigzagging across us. And I now knew the reality of war. We traveled with the amphibious forces and took care of the small craft. It was a repair ship that I was on with a crew of about 625, mostly mechanics. We had a medical officer.
Were you the only dental officer?
And two dental officers.
How did the facilities that they provided for you compare with what you had had in your office?
Exceptionally good. The facilities were exceptionally good. We had our own laboratory facilities with trained laboratory men so that we could do everything. Bridge work, castings, because nothing could be sent back to the States, it all had to be done there. That's why we had to tie up the small craft for repairs, because they could not be sent back to a port. It had to be done on the spot. And we had the foundry. We could manufacture any part and cast it. We had supplies of big steel plates that we sank into different parts of the ocean, hoping that if necessary we could come back and retrieve it. And that, of course, was never done. But it was, the logistics were such that they had all kinds of unknown problems.
You're saying this ship was self-contained, in addition to your dental facility?
Very self-contained. Oh. Barber shop. We made our own ice cream, which was naturally the envy of men on smaller vessels and ones that were based on the islands. Had our laundry facilities. As you stated, it was self-contained.
It's like a little city then.
Oh, yes. Yeah. except I was on it for 2 years. And after 2 years, it was almost like a prison sentence. A lot of fellows went stir crazy. Of course, there was always that feeling of the unknown. And as we moved on further and further into the Pacific, retaking these islands, finally we were, every vessel that the United States Navy owned was gathered at Ulithi, which was an atoll. And it made a fine harbor in the middle of the ocean. If the Japanese had the kind of communications that we had today with the satellites and this and that, we would have been eliminated. But the war in the Pacific was like blind man's buff. You never knew who was where and in what numbers. So there was always an air of mystique and an uneasiness with the feeling of the unknown. We were supposed to move off toward the northern islands of Japan. And try to retake some of the offshore islands. But as I learned later on, MacArthur, who had vowed to return to the Philippines, influenced President Roosevelt from a publicity angle to divert part of the fleet and try to retake the Philippines. The admiral felt that this was unnecessary from a military standpoint because we could just allow the Japanese to strangle on the vine. Their supply routes were destroyed, so we could bypass it. There was no necessity for military action. But MacArthur had his way, and so I was part of the group that was in the Philippine invasion. We didn't have adequate air coverage. We didn't have aircraft carriers. And so as a result, we had a lot of fatalities. By reading some of the historical recounts, I learned that the Japanese admiral was going to make one last stand and to try to destroy our fleet. And he had us bottled up in the harbor. It was San Pedro Harbor. He was astonished to find that we were unprotected, and therefore perceived a trap. As a result, he withdrew. He could have demolished us right then and there, and I wouldn't be giving you this interview. But he just felt it was impossible for us to be in such an indefensible position. So he withdrew. And so we retook the Philippines. From then on, my involvement in the war was primarily ended because the rest of the fleet had moved into Japanese waters. But when I was based at Manus,
where was Manus?
Manus was near the equator off Australia.
Oh.
There was an ammunition ship that was dive bombed
and it obliterated. But fortunately, it was only half full. Between that ammunition ship and my ship was another one, which was demolished because it took all the lateral explosives. We received everything that logged overboard. And I was working in the dental office, and the ship lifted, and my first thought was, oh hell, that's it.
And I think then, maybe this would be a good place for us to stop for the time being.
Okay.
And we certainly enjoyed hearing this morning. And think about it some more, and we'll get back to you the next time.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. It's very interesting.
Thank you very much.
It was a happy experience. I left as a lieutenant, as a lieutenant commander.
Wow.
I almost stayed, but I didn't think that my future wife was anxious to be.
Was she waiting for you? Had you met your wife before?
We were dead. I met her by a rare coincidence. That we had as we were sailing down through the Chesapeake Bay, we had a little trouble with the ship. And the captain said, you have 2 days off. So the only way out at that particular time was to fly, you know, from Norfolk. And so I flew up to my niece's wedding, Eileen, and her classmate, Jerry, was there. And that's how we met.
Where was this? In what city?
Pittsburgh, at the William Penn Hotel. If it had not been for that 2 days of leave, I would not have been married to her. So
there was a surprise 2-day leave.
Yeah, remarkable coincidences.
It was kismet.
Coincidence.
Well, thank you very much.
And that might be something interesting to talk about
in the future.
Mm. That's how we met.
Very interesting.
And we corresponded down the mahogany trees and create a ball field. And then we would play softball. That was our recreation. And sometimes we would take the crew over to the islands and give them one or two bottles of beer. And that was their only outlet from being on that ship. So it was not a happy life for them. And when we would play softball, we would have a canvas bag with iced beer, and as you came home, you would take a beer. A very memorable part was a Sing Sing that I went to. I had made connections. I had made connections with a Major McCarthy who was connected with the ANGAU, ANGAU, which was the Australian New Zealand administration of the islands. They had plantations where the levers got the coconuts for their products. Through this contact, I was invited to this small island where the only entry was by a small boat that could get through the reefs if they knew of the existence of two coconuts that were tied down as floats. And this is how we entered the island.
Okay. Going anywhere.
I took a small group of officers because of my contact with the major, and we went to this island for a Booker Day holiday. The natives came from far parts of the Pacific by these small craft. with, you know, just wood cutouts. No instruments or anything. By the knowledge of the stars, they were able to navigate and find this small
area. I wonder if they can still do that.
So that, well, they were navigators.
Yeah.
And they were dressed in all sorts of unusual adornment. They had their the grass skirts, their faces were scarred and zigzag cuts that they would have, tattoos, and they were all painted up in the headdresses, and they would stomp their feet in a, it was a unique rhythm, a natural rhythm, and the music was by reeds that they would just rub together, and it would emit this eerie sound. And they would go through this dancing, and then they had a soccer game. Now, you know how difficult it sometimes is to stop a fight between civilized players. Well, when these natives got aroused, the judges had huge wands of wood, clubs, and they would really vigorously smack them on the head trying to break it up. We were watching all this from a hut on a high hill that was elevated from the ground so that you wouldn't get all the insects, the snakes and scorpions and everything, and hanging from the corners of the this house were orchids and all sorts of exotic plants, and the breeze was whipping through there, and we were having our gin and tonics and beers, and it was just wonderful. And we had a couple black natives with dyed white hair who were girlfriends of a couple of the plantation caretakers, and we had captured a turtle that we tied to a stake in the ocean to keep it alive until it was time to have dinner on this particular day, and it was the most tasteful turtle soup and turtle meat that I had ever. And instead of potatoes, we had the taro roots. And and as I left, dusk was beginning to fall. And they were still dancing, and there was a reed music. And we were all very mellow this
week.
Was
this some sort of a special occasion? Or
yes, it's some sort of a native day that they celebrated. And we were very mellow when we returned to the ship.
For a couple of days. That sounds like an incredible experience.
Yeah, that was an incredible experience.
Well, that's
good.